Well, here we are, Murph, the third episode of the Great American Hockey Show. We've got plenty to talk about now. We've got a team that fell all over itself in the first three games of the season. We've got trade speculation. We've got controversy. We've got a team that I think everybody caught by surprise by how bad they were out of the gates. This is finally we got some hockey stuff to talk about with the regular season here.
Yeah, you know what? Hockey is here, and it's in full swing. And, you know, in terms of, like you said, giving us content to write and talk about, the Bruins have given us plenty. It may not be fun for the fans to watch, but it surely provides enough content for us. And you know what? I mean, I can't say this is any surprise what we've seen thus far. I mean, I know three games in, they were 0-3, and then they finally got their first win on the road in Colorado, but I'm not surprised. I mean, I just feel like this is where we were going to be when we spoke in the first week of the season.
I might be a little surprised by 16 goals allowed in three games, but we're going to talk about that as we kick off the show here. Welcome to the Great American Hockey Show. We are back in the Great American Hockey Show, and Murph, I know you're starting to get on a roll there in the cold open, so tell me more about why this is exactly what you expected. I was a little surprised. I didn't have a lot of hope for those first three games that they were going to play great and win all three. I expected maybe one win out of three games and, you know, some kind of respectability even with the defenseman core in tatters, but it sounds like this is exactly what you thought you were going to see.
No, you know what? It is, Joe, and I mean, I looked, when I saw those first three games on the schedule, I just said, they're going to be 0-3. I mean, you look at the quality of teams that was coming in there, and they get a Montreal team who is just on a roll right now and is really seems to be on a mission to finish what they thought they've started the last two seasons. And, of course, Tampa Bay, too. And I thought the Tampa Bay game was so telling of what I think this team is about right now. I've heard you use the word fragile. I think that's a perfect word to describe it, where here's Tampa Bay who came in, and I don't know if they went out and tied one on and watched some football Sunday night and just made it to the rink in time for the 1 o'clock matinee because they looked brutal to start the game. And then the Bruins get out to that 2-0 lead, but it was like, okay, we're going to turn it on now, says the Lightning, and boom, they just take off, and that was it. And I can see so many teams looking at the Bruins as that's the type of team we can do that to. We don't have to come in and have the best start. Not that they're going to purposely not have it, but hey, guys, we're always in it when we're playing the Bruins, and that's something we never heard with the Bruins defense over the last 10 years or ever since Claude Julien's been here.
Yeah, no, there wasn't the feeling when you were watching that game with Tampa Bay, and I agree with you that there was an urgency there, or there was we got to bring our best and we got to be prepared when we walk into the Garden and face the Bruins.
And that's a rink they haven't won in 10 years or something.
Yeah. No, it's true. And, you know, I think it was one of those things. They didn't feel like they needed to come in and prove something to the Bruins or that they were going to be in for a battle. And I think that's a byproduct certainly of last year, but it's also what we saw of this roster to start the season. You know, Zdeno Chara coming into his first game back, and you look at the rest of that D-core, and Torrey Krug, Adam McQuaid, Kevin Miller, Colin Miller, your best available Miller. Any more Millers, we can throw them in there. Joe Morrow, now Tommy Cross. When you look at the names on there, that's not going to strike a lot of fear into the hearts of offensive skill players and players that are going to do some damage in the offensive end aside from Chara. You know,
it feels like an AHL team, to be honest.
Yeah,
it really does.
Partially, sure.
Bottom, it feels like if you're talking about a top six or bottom six, with everything except Chara, feels like a bottom six.
Yeah, and I think the thing that I always go back to with this D-core is that you're asking everybody to do more than they're probably capable of right now, and I think that's a tough thing to do, and that's a difficult situation to be in, where you're asking 34-year-old Dennis Seidenberg and 38-year-old Zdeno Chara to still try to stay healthy, play big minutes, and be as good as they were, you know, 5 years ago. Mm-hmm. You're asking Adam McQuaid and Torrey Krug to be top four guys that are playing to us 20-plus minutes. You're asking Torrey Krug, and you did the first few games of the season, to be your number one D-man, playing like 23, 24 minutes a night and going up against the other team's best players and killing penalties and do these things that he's never done before. So you're counting on them to be, you know, your bedrock 20-minute-a-night kind of guys. And then you're asking Colin Miller, Zach Trotman, Joe Morrow, Tommy Cross, these young guys to come in and be able to do the job and not make a lot of mistakes and not kill you in the D-zone and play quality minutes. And it's not one of those situations situations where Claude feels comfortable of, I'm going to bench this guy and go with 5D. He just can't do that right now because he doesn't have the quality there. And, you know, it's hard to win hockey games when you're young, when you're mistake prone, and when you're asking guys to play in roles they're probably not best suited for among the D group. I think that's one of the hardest things to do in the NHL is win with a young defenseman group or win with guys that you know, have no experience being top four defensemen, and you throw them in there to the Wolves. And, you know, I continue to think, and this isn't going out on a limb, that this is going to be a huge problem for them and that we're going to see a lot of issues this year and a lot of bad goals scored until they address it one way or the other.
Yeah, and two things I want to say to that. I agree completely with everything you said, Joe. When you talk about all the mistake-prone defensemen they have, their youth, the inexperience, one thing I think the Bruins thought they could depend on, and I don't think they've gotten nearly enough of, is that the forwards that do have experience were going to come back and compensate a bit for the inexperience on the blue line and be there and play a better two-way game. I haven't seen that at all. I mean, I thought in those first two games, as a group, that was some of the laziest hockey I saw from a forward group in Claude Julien's time here.
Yeah.
And this is when he needs them most. This is when he needs his forwards to really play both ends of the ice. He's always preached that, but he's always had sort of the defensemen to kind of compensate for their mistakes. This is when he needs those guys to come back the most, and they're not doing it.
See, I don't know if it's lazy or if it's a lot of guys that are new and young and sort of uncomfortable with a new system and also uncomfortable with, like, sort of what their role is, who their line mates are. There's so much new stuff thrown in with this team.
Yeah.
That I think you saw guys on the ice where they weren't sure where they were even supposed to be.
Right.
You know, and in the D zone, in the breakout, wherever it was, that it was almost like they were thinking through what they were doing rather than just automatically saying, all right, this is where I'm supposed to be, this is what we're doing, and then you're off. You know what? Breakouts, D-zone play, so much of that is feel and instinct and, you know, not having to think about what you're doing, just knowing it instinctively, because you've learned it and because it's sort of been ingrained in your system. I mean, there was definitely a laziness component to it for sure. And I think you heard some frustration in Claude Julien's voice at some points kind of talking about that and alluding to that. And Chris Kelly, after one of the games, talking about how, you know, if guys don't know the system, they need to start asking questions because, you know, they should know the system at this point all through training camp. I mean, all that stuff, when you hear it, is surprising to me, and it makes you wonder if the message is getting through from the coach down to the player.
You know what? And it's a good point. I'll take a mulligan on that. Let me say, as opposed to laziness, mental laziness, because like what you're saying there, it's them waiting sort of in their head for the other guy to do what he's supposed to do, as opposed to them doing it. And so I don't... You're right. It's unfair to say they're not working hard.
No, but it's not like everybody's Bergeron, where they take it upon themselves to go help out the D if they're in trouble,
or he could just figure out any system that you put him in. You know, I mean, I look at it though, like, you know, a guy like Brett Conley, you know, he had his sort of audition, so to speak, to kind of get a feel for the guys on his team last spring, and yeah, he's got a couple points here and there, but that's a guy he drives me nuts. He seems like such a floater, and I think he could be so much better for this team, and it's really frustrating. Obviously, the Tampa Bay Lightning were pretty frustrated with it, and that's why he's a Bruin now, but they need guys to just step up mentally is the key right now. And you know, you bring up is the message getting through right now, and obviously that's going to lead to questions about the coaching.
Sure.
Joe, we talk about this defense, and you talk about are they going to address it. The bigger question is, why wasn't it addressed? And, you know, I've said it on other shows, and I'm going to go right out and say it, and Cam Neely can say all he wants that it's not fair for us to put Claude Julien on the hot seat. Cam Neely and Don Sweeney put him on the hot seat. They have set that coach up to fail, and I'm convinced that he's already in their mind a scapegoat come Thanksgiving, and I don't think it's fair at all.
Yeah, I think it doesn't take much to read between the lines to put it all together and to say that he's not going to be long for this team and for this organization, just given what he has to work with.
Yeah.
The defenseman core just is not good enough to be a playoff team, and not even close. And, you know, expecting him to install a system that isn't really that comfortable for him is
or for his players.
Right. Something he's not used to doing, something that is out of his comfort zone, to force him or to direct him towards working with young players that he's not always comfortable or trusting with. You're asking him to do so much stuff that's away from his strengths and what he does best and, you know, what he's had success with. in the NHL. And you know, maybe some of it is that, that the league is just going away from his way of coaching, and that, you know, he's from a sort of bygone era that's changing over to a different style of coach, a different way of looking at things. I think that's part of it. But I don't think there's any question that he does not have the artillery or the weapons to have the kind of success that he's had in the past, and it makes it more difficult for him. But, you know, there's two ways of looking at it. You can look at it like he's being set up to fail, or he's being scapegoated, or you can look at it like they wanted to give him one more chance because he's done so much here, and give him a chance here, even though it's not the perfect situation, because clearly they would have liked to have had a better defenseman corps going into this year, too, if they could have. They were trying to move up in the draft to get a defenseman. They tried to do things in the summertime that didn't work out, and, you know, it wasn't the best of both worlds. It wasn't what management wanted. It wasn't what the coaching staff wanted as far as the roster that they had going into the season. But you could look at it like they wanted to give him one more chance before they said, all right, we've got to move on to somebody else, whether it's Butch Cassidy in Providence or somebody else. But, it's a bad situation. It's a difficult situation. And like you, I think it's inevitable that by Thanksgiving time, there's going to be a different coach behind the bench.
I agree with you that the game is maybe going in a different direction than Claude Julien's style completely. But you can't tell me that if you put him on one of these teams, these contenders that have gotten off to tough starts, say a Columbus or an Anaheim, that already have proven veterans there, that are already really knocking on the door, that he can't be the final touch there and help them
Pittsburgh
get to a cup.
Reunite him with Phil.
Like somebody tweeted to us there, huh? Put him with Phil Kessel. You know what, though? Hey, put him there and bring Mark Recchi down on the bench with Claude Julien. What a tandem that would be on the bench. But, yeah, I don't know if Phil Kessel and Claude Julien will get along. But, you know, he could be the final piece to a contender. And I think that it still could happen, but I think they hurt his chances of doing that when they left him out to dry for 5 weeks and didn't give him his fate. You know, and I think you say, yeah, they maybe gave him another chance here, but at the same time, he could have got a job somewhere else.
But I think, well, he will get a job. You know, if he's out of a job in Boston, it's not going to take long before another team's going to hire him. But I also feel like maybe there was an element of wanting to see if last year's malaise and some of the lack of effort and lack of cohesiveness on the team and just the general sort of bad vibes that you had in the room, if that was all attributable to maybe some of the players that were in there and
that
also the GM and some resentment towards the GM because the team was blown apart and Boychuk was traded and all that. And they wanted to see if this year, if it was a totally different thing, if there was high effort, high energy, they were listening to everything he was saying and, you know, it was coming together like it had in the past. And it's difficult to weigh, I think, if you're Cam Neely or Don Sweeney, was it Peter? Was it both? Claude both? Was it one or the other? And then you go into this year. I mean, let's face it. Claude deserved, I think, another chance, given that he's been in the playoffs almost every year and given all the wins that he had. He's getting that chance. It's not the perfect chance, certainly. And it's probably going to end up, like you said, where he's gone, and they're looking at it as a way to, you know, derive some energy and maybe get things spinning in another direction if it starts out really bad. And it's setting up that way. I mean, everybody across the league kind of recognizes it.
Yeah, it's interesting though to see around the league how much how differently, you know, Claude's peers, the media, fans look at him compared to how he gets looked at in this city. I think it's really interesting, Joe, and you know it. You travel the league.
Sure.
You go to different cities. You talk to managements from different teams and scouts and players and reporters. And it just seems like, you know, I don't know if it's just the general mentality against coaches and managers in Boston, but I just feel like Claude Julien gets a raw deal and is not appreciated enough for what he's done. You appreciate it. I appreciate it. There are some that do, but I don't think he gets nearly enough appreciation for what he did for this franchise.
Not from the fan base, and I think part of that is the sort
of... Or from some of the local media contingent,
too. Yeah, no, true. But especially the talk radio, sports talk radio...
Who show up at maybe three games a year.
Yeah, but I think part of it is the sort of youth hockey coach mentality where guys think they could do a better job than Claude. There's a lot of that, and the same thing happens with the Red Sox manager, and I think it's... Because hockey's such a big thing here and because so many people are involved, I think they look at Claude and they say, oh, I could do a better job. It's like you and I and the stuff that we run into every day where you're criticized for something you write or something you do, you know, there's an element of just the angry fan base out there that thinks, oh, I could do that better or I could do that job and don't realize half or even a fraction of what goes into it and how difficult it is and that they really couldn't at the end of the day handle it. And, you know, it's that part of it's pretty funny. You know, but getting back to one thing about Claude, I do think they're going to have a difficult job finding a guy as good as him when they do go out and look for another coach.
Exactly.
And I think that's going to be a telling thing.
And is that when we realize this really is a rebuild?
Yeah, maybe. And I think the one thing you look at with Claude is, do they decide to go in that direction? Do they not? It's a hard decision because I do feel like the only reason that the Bruins or the only way that they hung him out to dry, I feel like I didn't even think the weeks in the summertime where he wasn't sure what was going on was hanging him out to dry because Don Sweeney had a right to figure out what he wanted to do and talk to everybody. I think the one thing that they could have done that they haven't is, and Cam Neely said it's unfair to put him on the hot seat, but Cam Neely also had the power to take him off the hot seat and say his job is safe, this is our guy.
His words were very calculated.
At the end of the year, no question. And I think that's the one area where you look at and say, something interesting is going on here.
Yep.
And maybe there is, if things really break
and
bad,
then,
they'll
and
go
And then you know what will happen, Joe. Then it will be Cam Neely who says that you and I and the media chased Claude out of town. That's
well,
what's going to happen because we put him on the hot seat. And what were they going to do? They had to give in.
Murph, who cares? We're the media.
I think it's
hilarious. Blamed for anything everywhere.
Now that we're on that topic, Joe,
before we get to that,
yeah.
First I want to get to just the trade stuff. And do you think that the Bruins do need to make a trade to address the weaknesses on the roster and have both foot in competing for a playoff spot? Or do you feel like they need to rebuild, especially like it's hard to tell, four games into the season,
yeah.
right? But if things go the way that they are now, if they're way out of it come Thanksgiving time, early December, do they need to decide to rebuild and maybe deal off a few veterans?
For sure. Yes, 100% yes. And you need to not care what you or I say, what the media says, what the fans say. Who cares? You cannot just stay in this purgatory just to get butts in the seats like they did for so long in the mid-90s to early 2000s. Don't go back to that. I would rather you go back to the dark ages, and if you want to really be a contender again, you're going to have to stink for a bit. You're going to have to suffer for a bit. I mean, look at the Maple Leafs right now. There is no tougher city to do what the Toronto Maple Leafs are doing right now and really rebuilding and really being patient, not rushing prospects. There is no tougher city besides maybe Montreal to do that. And the Bruins have to understand they need to not worry right now about the bottom line. If they want to have long-term success, they have to rebuild.
I agree with you.
They can.
But the good thing about the NHL, right, is you don't necessarily have to completely rip everything apart.
No, you can do it in 2 years, maybe.
Yeah, you can rebuild very quickly if you want to.
Exactly.
And it makes sense for a new GM coming in and a president that now really is able to flex his muscles and create the roster that he wants.
Right.
That they would change over and they would have a lot of turnover on the roster and build a team more in their image of what they want, what they think is a winning hockey team. And, it's a tough situation, and I have sympathy for them because this is a city that's not very patient for rebuilding projects. They're not going to be patient.
We've been spoiled
in the city.
Blow it up.
Yeah, and there's clearly not a chance for them to get in the playoffs. I think there's going to be unrest among the Bruins fan base because of that and for that, and understandably so.
But no more Band-Aids.
Yeah.
That's what I'm trying to say.
And I think, and this is why, I wrote the piece that I did a couple days ago that certainly got widely circulated afterwards, and I kind of didn't expect it to, and I was surprised it did, but I guess anything mentioning a trade on any level or chatter on any level all of a sudden blows up, especially with the start that the Bruins got off to. But I had, separate people coming up to me, hockey people and sources, and telling me that in the day-to-day due diligence of Don Sweeney talking to other teams, he talks to all kinds of GMs, he's a hardworking guy, and he explores all kinds of different things and has all kinds of different conversations.
Why wouldn't he? That's his job.
Yes. Established players like the names of Dano Chara and Brad Marchand popped up in conversations and not they're being shopped. Not they're going to be traded tomorrow. Not that anything is imminent or they're on the trading block. That if things really go bad for this team over the next couple of months, and you know they're chilling in the wine cellar in the Eastern Conference with no hope of getting to the playoffs around you know December or maybe before Christmas time. Certainly after Thanksgiving, that those kind of players might be available. And you know I didn't think I was exactly you know giving away company secrets and saying that some veteran players might be on the move from this team if they're way out of it come November, December. I mean, that's just common sense. And, you know, the rest was history.
Well, let me just say first off, Joe, and I know you don't want to say it, but you did nothing wrong. And maybe it's being your friend, obviously, but also being a fellow reporter. I really take offense sometimes to people out there, both in the media and with the fan base, that change the words of a story.
Sure.
Go read your story. Go back and read Hag's story. And you tell me where he said the word shopped, okay? You tell me where that came up. You tell me where
Which is a pretty strong word.
Okay,
when you say
tell
shopped
me where
or when you say on the block, that's when you're saying this guy is going to get
and
traded.
And you tell me where he reported they were going to be traded.
Right.
It is insane the way people twist your words. And I had this done to me, not only by fans and media alike, but by a certain player on the Bruins who took offense to what I said. When I said basically the same thing, I said that his name, and I'll go right on and say it was Brad Marchand, that his name was being talked about in possible trade talks. And you got to think, people, all right? We've been in this business for a while. We do think about how we word these things, all right? Because we don't want that misinterpretation. And just because a guy's name comes up, Joe, doesn't necessarily mean the Bruins brought his name up.
Right.
Do you not think that Don Sweeney or when Peter Chiarelli was here, that he didn't get calls every single day saying, would Patrice Bergeron ever be available or would Tuukka Rask? Of course he does.
Murph, you don't think Peter Chiarelli picks up the phone now and doesn't want Zdeno Chara in Edmonton if
exactly.
he could get him and he'd be a perfect fit there and that he having a good relationship with Don Sweeney wouldn't pick up the phone call and do something like that?
This stuff happens. I don't know why that's so hard to accept, and it's not an offense to the player. We're not insulting the player. And,
right.
You know, there's people out there saying it's so insulting to the player and they shouldn't have to deal with this. Why? That's part of the game. They're getting paid millions of dollars, and we're just reporting what we're told and what we believe to be fact. We're not trying to create something. We're not hockeybuzz.com. We're not one of those sites. We're telling you what actual real management people are telling you. And I'd like to see what would happen, Joe, if we stopped doing that.
Mm-hmm.
I think it would be interesting. If the media stopped writing stories like that, don't you think they'd complain? Where are they?
Mm-hmm.
So,
we never hear anything, or you know,
yeah.
what's going on with this team, and you know.
But the bottom line is, of course, the Boston Bruins are going to look into that, and I think they should. I think they should be definitely getting those feelers now, and they can start to build a rapport with some GMs, start to get some ongoing talks, and then if the time comes, you've already laid the groundwork, and you're not. The Bruins have been a team that's notoriously got caught flat-footed when it comes to trades, right?
Yeah.
Whether it leaks out that some players got some off-ice issues or that he's not liked in a dressing room or that he wants out, they get themselves in a pickle that way and they can't get what they probably should get in return for that player. This is great that the Bruins are doing this right now. They should always be exploring what a player can net coming back.
No doubt. And I think that Don Sweeney will do that. And I think he's diligent about those things. And he's going to pursue
smart.
Every lead. And he's a hard worker. And, you know, but getting back to what we were talking about for a sec, the other thing that I find funny is when a management type or, you know, any sort of insider comes and says, well, you know, my sources inside the organization say that that's not happening or I didn't hear that. Or, you know, for something like this, where it's a long range player that might be available in a few months if things go really bad for the Bruins. Do you think there's any way on God's green earth the team is going to say, yep, confirmed.
Yep,
we're trying that guy.
Yep.
We're trying to right the ship. We're trying to turn things around here. We're trying
cannot
to,
wait to
we're
get
trying
rid
to
of him.
Win a hockey game. But yep, we're talking about trades and getting rid of everybody. I mean, the foolishness of thinking that stuff is ever going to get confirmed by anybody when it's going
on. Well, the GM denied it.
Closed doors. I know.
And here's another thing. When a GM comes out and denies it, that means it's true usually.
Let me give you a good story. A couple of years ago, Johnny Boychuk, I reported multiple times, and I think I was the only one, or maybe it was me and one other person, mm-hmm. that he was going to get traded, that the Bruins were serious about moving him. And I remember how incredulous the fan base was. Oh, that's not going to happen. He's a Bruins for life, blah, blah, blah. You know, they'd never trade Johnny. And I remember at the State of the Bruins, that Peter Chiarelli got asked about it by somebody in the crowd during the, you know, question and answer with the season ticket holders. And he made a point of saying, you know, you can't believe, and it was about Boychuk. He said, you can't believe everything that you read. And he singled out me, and I think he might have singled out Fluto, and said, you know, you can't believe everything you're reading from those guys, and he's not going to get traded. Within a week, Johnny Boychuk was gone, right? This is what happens. They are paid to not tell the truth about this stuff, and they shouldn't be transparent. It's not their job, you know? And I'm not saying that Chara and Marchand are going to get traded like next week like Boychuk does.
But just because they say they're not going to doesn't mean they won't.
Exactly. Exactly. You know?
And, if Wayne Gretzky can be traded or Bobby Orr can be traded, anyone can be traded.
You learn in sports that some people are just paid not to tell you what's going on and not to tell you what the truth is. And, you know, you find it funny sometimes when the public just takes all that for face value and uses it as the shining piece of proof.
And furthermore, Joe, I'd like to say that, you know, a lot of times, you know, GMs or people, management, whatever, with teams, our sources – don't think we don't get used, all right? A lot of times when they feed us this stuff, they're trying to light a fire under a player. Mm-hmm. And then they're going to turn around and deny it that they never said it. Of course they're not going to say it, but that's what they might be trying to do. Who knows? Maybe they're looking at Brad Marchand and saying, this guy's got off to a slow start. Now, obviously, he's got a concussion right now, so he can't knock him for that. But, you know, that's another tool that they use. They use the media to get under the player's skin. It's just common sense. I don't get why this is just so insulting to people. Who knows?
I don't get it either, but maybe we'll spend the next episode trying to get to the bottom of it, Murph, because I don't know if there's
I don't like hurting people's feelings, Joe. I really don't. I'm a nice guy. I'm sorry to everyone out there.
Hockey players are a sensitive sort, Murph. You know, you got to watch out.
Never that way before.
You got to watch out for trampling all over their feelings.
This damn social media is what it is.
Speaking of hockey players, we're going to jump over to a new segment now called Three Periods with Jimmy Hayes, where I ask him a bunch of questions, and then when we come back, we're going to sit down with Bruins' new agitator, Zach Rinaldo.
Joe Haggerty here with Jimmy Hayes. Favorite local restaurant that you love to go to, or place that, you know, a game day tradition that you go there to eat, or you at least go there a couple times a week to eat?
I'd say it'd have to be, there's a tie, because I always go to Ichiro Sushi in East Milton Square, and Amarine's right on Broadway and H Street. So, I mean, those are my two spots. Those are spots I've been going to since I've been a little kid. So, those are probably my two favorite.
What's Amarine's? Is that, what kind of food is that?
It's like all types of American food. It's they got a different menu. They change the menu all the time. It's, my godfather owns it, so I've been going there since I've been a little kid. So it's they'll make whatever you want.
Favorite movie set in Boston that you've over the years?
I'd say The Town. I love The Town. Yeah, The Town's a great movie.
Yeah. What do you like about that? Just that it was set in Charlestown. You recognize a lot of the things.
Yeah, it's like I say, you get to recognize everything, and it's just it's kind of a cool experience to watch a movie where you see like certain scenes, and there's scenes in The Town where my friends and I used to hang out down on that path in Dorchester underneath the bridge and stuff. So it's just kind of a cool little area.
And anything as far as music specifically that you listen to, like right before a game to get ready?
I think the city comes out in me during with the music. I like to listen to all types of hip hop and rap music. Anything from Meek Mill to Drake, Sammy Adams. So it's just it's all up there.
Did you pick a side in the Meek Mill Drake?
It was kind of disappointing for me because they're my two favorite guys. So I mean, I think Drake got the best of them a little bit.
Absolutely. Thanks, bud. Appreciate it.
Now, welcome back to the Great American Hockey Show podcast. Joe Haggerty, Jimmy Murphy here with Zach Rinaldo, one of the newest Boston Bruins. Zach, welcome to Boston, and how excited are you just to be wearing the black and gold and getting ready to go here?
I'm roaring to go. This preseason's gonna be a little too long for me, so I'm chomping the bit right now to get the regular season out of the way.
How much of a fit do you think you're going to be just with the city, blue-collar city, you know, similar in Philadelphia that way? They like their physical hockey. They like their players to play on the edge and throw their body around. I mean, when you heard you were coming to Boston, I imagine you were pretty excited.
Yeah, I was really excited. A lot of people thought I'd, be kind of upset and shocked. I was shocked, but I wasn't upset. You know, it comes with the territory that I'm being a professional hockey player and just being a professional in general. You got to take take everything with positivity, and that's what I did. Now I'm a Bruin. Now I'm really excited to be here. And I think I've adapted really good in the preseason games that I've played, and I've showed what I'm out to do, and I've set goals for myself that I've achieved throughout the preseason, drawing penalties, taking pucks to the net, shooting the pucks. I think as long as I stay on the edge and I don't go over the edge, I'll be laughing here in Boston.
Was it surprising at first, I guess, when you were traded? I mean, were you one of those guys that maybe thought, you know, went all the way up through the system in Philadelphia that you'd probably be with that organization forever?
Yeah, especially being drafted there. And I was drafted there as I was 18, maybe 17 at the time. So, and I was there till, you know, just now I'm 25 now. So they saw me from, you know, when I was a teenager to, you know, a mature young kid right now. So, but you know what? They showed me the ropes. They showed me everything that I needed to know. And I think it was time for me to leave the nest and kind of bring everything that I've learned there to a different mindset.
Zach, you want to go back to what you're talking about, sort of walking the line there and knowing what not to do, what to do. Give us an example of maybe what you're not doing when you're not walking the line properly.
What I'm not doing?
Yeah.
What do you mean?
Like in terms, I mean, if, you know, you're talking about trying to aggravate players out there and get them to go in the box, what's crossing that line for you?
Crossing the line for me is finishing a hit that I'm not 100% on that I think I could. The outcome. I have to know the outcome before I do it. It's tough sometimes because I'm going so fast and things are happening so quickly that I put myself in scenarios even before the scenario comes to me, before the game or before my shift. And then if I don't think I can fulfill that, I don't want to cross the edge. If I think I'm going to cross the edge, then I don't even finish. I don't even do it anymore. Because I don't want to get suspended. I don't want to put my team in a bad situation. So, yeah, I just make sure I can fulfill what I'm set out to do. And if I don't think I can, don't think I'm going to be able to do it, I just don't do it at all.
Is there a specific instance you can recall where, you know, maybe a suspension you got where you said, "All right, I got to start to think about this more"? Or is it just sort of over a period of time?
It's just over a period of time. I mean, I've been suspended a handful of times now, and. It's tough. If things happen so quickly out there, sometimes I can, you know, you can't stop on at a drop of a dime. It's very tough to explain if you've never been in that situation before. So, but I've learned from it. Now I can know what to do, and I can adapt from it.
Is there an instinct that you have to fight when you're a guy that likes to hit? You're a guy that wants to play on the edge and really cause things to happen out there and bring energy. Where I'm sure there's a part of you in there that you see a guy that you can make a good hit on, separate the puck, but he might be in a vulnerable spot where you want to go after him. Mm-hmm. But also in your mind, you're kind of saying, "All right, I can't do that." That must be really difficult when you're going.
Yeah, it
that
is.
Split second.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. But now I've learned that. If I hit with all my strength and all my ability to hit, that it can put them, just the impact can change their body and their and the way they go into the boards. So if I'm thinking that if I blow this guy up, if I hit this guy with all my ability to hit him, then it can turn out bad. So I just let up. I go 50% instead of 100%, which sucks for me because I don't like doing.
Doing
stuff
anything 50%?
Half-assed. I don't half-assed anything my whole life. Never have. Never wasn't brought up like that. So I'm biting my tongue to, you know, make the league happy.
You did you have a conversation at some point in your, you know, junior career when you were younger about playing the way that you do, about hitting and about, you know, playing with energy and about doing that, like where maybe somebody sat you down and said, "This is how you're going to get, you know, to the NHL," or "This is where you can sort of maximize your potential"? Is it something where you just have always played this way? Like, how did that sort of evolution come about?
I've learned the hard way. Yeah. That's just how it is. No one told me, like, "Zach, this is the player we want you to be. This is what you need to do." I've just kind of just learned the hard way. Yeah, my juniors, I remember Dale Hunter was my coach, and the one thing that has always stuck with me, he said, "Hard and smart." So, and still to this day, I say it to my whole team, you know, "Hard and smart, boys, hard and smart." Because that, for me, you know, I can work as hard as I can, but if I'm not smart at the same time, then it doesn't really, you know, it's not positive. So hard and smart for me, that stuck in my head. That was Dale Hunter.
Bruins already have a similar player that plays on the edge in Brad Marchand. What was it like playing against him?
Me and him had no issues.
Yeah.
Yeah, we had no issues.
Because you guys are so like, or what?
It was me. It was like me and McQuaid had issues.
Lucic, right?
Luch, me and Lucic had issues. Yeah. Who else? Campbell. I fought Campbell. I fought Horton. I fought like five guys off the Bruins. So, but no Marchie. No, I think he knows better though.
What's it like? I mean, like, you know, you see Marchie though, and you know, we've heard Coach Julian here say he needs to use his skill a little more and not worry so much about walking that edge or playing with that edge. Use the skill too. I saw you blend in some skill here in the preseason. Are you going to try and do that a little more this year?
Yep, that's what I'm here to do. That's what they told me they want me to do. They want me to, especially in preseason, just to get that confidence, shoot the puck. And, I mean, I'm in practice, I'm scoring goals, I'm making great plays, and I'm building my confidence in practice too. So if I bring all that in preseason and practice to the regular season, I think I'll be good to go.
What's Zach Rinaldo's Fight for a Cause?
It's my charity event that I've been having the last 3 years. Money goes to McMaster's Sick Kids Hospital back home. We do like a ball hockey tournament. There was 300 and something kids came out this year. They all play for free. We have sponsors that donate. I got like 15 NHL guys that come out and, you know, support the cause. We do that, and then there's a gala dinner. We also raise money there too. And there's one, then after that is one big party for my city, and we just celebrate the whole day.
What's the town like that you grew up in?
How Hamilton? It's a tough city. Yeah, all my friends and family are there. It's where I go home. It's where I resign every year after the season. It's probably where I'll, when I retire, I'll probably set up shop there and have a family there and stuff like that. But yeah, it's a tough city.
What do you think? It just fits who you are as a person. I mean, what do you like so much?
I grew up there. Yeah, I know my roots are there. I know like the back of my hand. So. I won't go anywhere else. I always go home. Everyone's there. Everyone. That's just me. Hamilton is just me. Yeah.
What's your family like? What do they do for a living? What was it like growing up in the Rinaldo household?
It was hectic. Yeah, it was really hectic. My dad's a hard nosed guy. He's very stern, and he's Italian, so he's a clean freak too. So when things weren't in order, things weren't his way. He's a control freak, and he would get real pissed. But my mom was real laid back, and she was cool. I got a younger sister too, so me and her were only 2 years apart, so we went to high school together and stuff like that too. So that was pretty cool. And my family's just around the corner. I mean, we're all pretty close. So it was hectic though.
Dealing with control freaks, your dad being a control freak, that must have helped with all the hockey coaches, because a lot of those guys can be control freaks too, right?
Yeah, my dad and the hockey coaches didn't get along at all. So they kind of butt heads.
Yeah, he had some advice.
They said when I got drafted, I came with baggage. And that was my dad. He always voiced his opinion. He didn't care what you thought. He still doesn't care what people think of him. He'll, you know, say what he wants. That's just how he is.
Was your mom Italian too?
No, she's English. She's born in England.
Okay. So dad cooks the meat sauce then?
No, he don't.
No?
He cleans.
Okay.
He does the laundry.
So
and he
who
does
took
the
care of the good Italian sauce in the family?
My nonno and nonna, my grandparents, my dad's parents.
Okay.
And they still do to this day.
I had one too.
Yeah, they still do it to this day. And they go to Italy every summer. I think last year was their last year gone to Italy. Yeah, they take care of my carbs.
You're going to have to check out the North End while you're here.
Oh, I've been checking out the North End.
All right.
I got some good stuff there. Monica's is good.
What? How important was hockey growing up to you? Was it everything? I mean, was everything sort of centered around you playing hockey? Is that kind of the way it was?
Yeah, it was me. And my dad put me on skates, I don't know, 6 years old starting out. And then I was playing rep at 8 years old. And all the way through rep hockey, and then I went to a boarding school in Saskatchewan, and that was I was like 14 years old, and
that must have been kind of a wake up call.
Yeah, I wanted to do it.
Oh,
my
you
parent,
did?
Yeah, I wanted to do it. My buddy was going for some hockey and some other reasons, and he invited me out to go, and I went. I was 14 years old and left home when I was 14, and I haven't been back since.
That's interesting. At what point did you know you could play in the NHL? Did you have an idea?
When I got drafted to the NHL.
Yeah.
Yeah, when I got drafted to the Flyers. And then when I went to camp, I made a mess. I did it unbelievable. I turned some heads for a good reason.
You made a mess in a good way.
Yeah, I made a mess in a good way. I opened eyes, and I I put myself on the map my first camp. I don't even think they have scrimmages anymore in Philly because of what I did out there. So
you're just blowing guys up.
I was hammering guys.
Are we talking Hanson brothers? Or are we talking?
No. I'm talking. You know,
just what your game is.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. So I think that's when it clicked.
How much are you looking forward to? I mean, we all know, you know, you're a hard hitter, you're a physical player, mm-hmm. you set the tone. But Murph mentioned this a little bit. But are you really looking forward to some of those offensive chances you're getting, using the speed mm-hmm. and showing that you're not maybe as one-dimensional as people around the league thought?
I'm dying to show that. So I'm working so hard at it in practice, too, just to show my teammates and just show the coaches, too, that I can do it and they see it. And I begin chances in preseason. I haven't had luck. I've hit the post 2 times. I haven't got the bounces that I want. But other than that, as long as I'm getting the opportunities and I'm grasping the opportunities and taking control of them, I'll be good to go. I mean, I'm making plays right now. I'm skating. I'm wheeling. I'm using my speed. I'm drawing penalties from my speed mm-hmm. when I'm going on a half breakaway, and I'm bringing pucks to the net and I'm shooting everything. So I've been. For me right now, I'm positive right now.
And we should be very clear, you're drawing penalties with your speed. It's not that you're drawing penalties by play acting or doing anything else out there, right?
No, that's not me. That's not me. No, it never will be. I don't care if someone, told me to take a dive. I'm not going to take a dive just because, that's just not me. I'm not a fake. I don't fake.
Have you bonded with any of the guys in particular strongly since you've been here? Anybody you've gotten to know and you really
like? It's been different because we're not all together.
Yeah.
We're kind of spread out. So it was funny, I think. It was like the first time I saw Tuukka on the ice. I was like, what? I was like, Tuukka, I haven't seen you in like a week, man. Where you been? And it was funny. But I think once we get the regular season on its way and we're all on the plane together, then we're with each other day in and day out. Every morning I'll be seeing these guys in the morning. So it's bound to, the whole team will probably be clicking.
And I think once that happens, the fan base is going to embrace you in a big way, even if you were an enemy.
They definitely embraced me when I was an enemy, so I can't wait for me to be on their team.
Yeah, it'll be the warm embrace from the Bruins fans instead of the Bruins.
Yeah, exactly.
Zach, appreciate the time, man. Thanks.
No problem, guys.
All right, Murph. Well, the Bruins are in rough shape. There's plenty to talk about, and I'm sure it'll be a rip-roaring episode a couple of weeks from now. Thanks again for sitting in, and maybe next week or the next episode we'll get that Greta Garbo of Hockey Reporters, Mike Giardi, or the gleaming smile of Kevin Walsh to join us for a little hockey talk. What do you think?
That sounds like a plan, my friend.
All right, buddy.
Let's make it happen.
We're going to make that happen. All right. That's it for this week's Great American Hockey Show. As always, keep it great, keep it American, and always, always... keep it about hockey.
If you want to hear more Comcast Sportsnet podcasts or learn how to subscribe to our iTunes feed, head over to csnne.com/podcast.